and gentlemen, welcome to Red Ice Radio. Thank you for being here today. I hope you had a good weekend. I'm Henrik Palmgren from Sweden, and this is an independent alternative right radio program with headquarters in Northern Europe and North America. We've been following the media attacks and the debacle around Donald Trump for about 2 weeks now since the primaries started, and what this means for America and international politics. The attacks on Trump by the mainstream media have been pretty much nonstop. The attack and character assassination from other Republicans and also naturally from Democrats shows how scared they are when someone from outside the political establishment is reaching in to take control of American politics. They have become so desperate, in fact, that they are now even trying to claim the underdog position. Our guest that we have with us was drawn into the controversy a little bit over a week ago now as a way to tarnish Donald Trump and associate him with the Ku Klux Klan. David Duke is with us, and he's here not to only sort out for us what happened, how he was dragged into this, but also talk about why he supports Trump and urges people to vote for him. Lana from Radio 314 is sitting in during this show as well. Now, a lot of things are happening every day, new developments all the time. We are going to talk about the shutdown of the Trump rally in Chicago and also the attacks on him in Ohio. Just last night, in fact, CNN allowed the attacker on TV to explain himself, handing over the world stage of one of the biggest international media outlets in the world without any tough questions, without any investigation into his background, to show his true hatred for America, for Americans, for white people, and for Trump and his supporters. This went completely unchecked. He was, in fact, rewarded for doing what he was doing. Can you imagine if a Trump supporter was caught in the same way, trying to attack Hillary or Bernie? His life would have been turned upside down and exposed in a second all over international media. All his past associations, all those he had supported, would have been dragged into this as well as a way to guilt by association. Not in this case. They give crazy leftists, Marxist educated, really a product of the American education system these days, free rein to talk about his position as a way to legitimize his attacks, despite the fact that it actually made death threats against Donald Trump. Anybody with an internet connection could figure this out. Check some of his past associations, his past videos, his views, blogs, tweets, very simple, but not for a multi-million dollar endeavor like CNN, who only has hundreds of reporters and journalists available to them. More about all of this now with David Duke. David Duke, welcome back to Red Ice Radio. Thank you so much for coming back on the show again. Great to have you here.
It's my pleasure. I love your radio program, and both of you are doing fantastic work.
Well, thank you so much. And Lana from Radio 314 is with us here, joining in today. Good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
All right. So, Dr. Duke, today we're going to talk about Trump. It is something unprecedented that is taking place in American political history right now. The media have been doing everything they can, together with lobby groups, even meeting of industrialists, and millions of dollars in negative ads and smear campaigns to stop Trump. They even went so far to drag you into this as well, David, trying to pin something that you were involved in, what, 40 years ago, the KKK, to guilt the Donald by association because you spoke about him on your radio show. So let's begin with that story so people for themselves can actually hear what happened and how you were dragged into this.
Well, let's just talk about it from, the basics first. That, first of all, people need to know that I didn't go to any of the media out there. I've got a major radio program with hundreds of thousands of people here on my show and hear the archived versions of it, which are repeated all over the world. And I certainly have an obligation to tell my listeners what I think about the political structure. I've been in politics before, as you know. I was elected to the House of Representatives in Louisiana. I also was elected as a Republican official by ballot, not by caucus or any sort of inter-party operation. 8 years I served as a public official. Before that, I was involved in politics. I even won the vice presidential nomination as a conservative Democrat in the northern state of New Hampshire with 64% of the vote, the same position, by the way, that Al Gore won 4 or 8 years later when he ran in New Hampshire. So I've got a political record, and I was known, so well known in America politically. I got publicity. I was in a nonviolent Klan group for a short period of time, about 4 years in the middle 70s, and that's literally 4 decades ago now. And then later I realized that I came to believe the Klan certainly wasn't the right approach. I was always nonviolent. I always condemned violence. And In fact, I became famous as a guy that was opposed to violence in the Klan, but I left the organization because I got tired of that kind of image. I didn't think that was the way forward. And then later, about 12 years later, I got elected to the House of Representatives in Louisiana. And then I ran for major offices, which got incredible national publicity, obviously, for the United States Senate and for governor. And just to give you an idea of the popularity and the power of what I was doing, in Louisiana, running against the 18-year incumbent Democratic senator, the Republican nominee of the bosses, he literally dropped out of the race to prevent me from winning the United States Senate seat. And I came within a whisper of going to the United States Senate. And in that race, for instance, I scored 600,000 votes in Louisiana. Now, 600,000 votes in Louisiana as compared to, say, the Michigan primary. Let's just take a look at that. Now, the Michigan primary, Sanders got something like 500-and-something-thousand votes. Hillary got 400-and-something-thousand votes. I think Trump got 400-and-something-thousand votes or 500,000 votes. I got more votes for U.S. senator than any of those people, the top leaders of the Democratic Party, to be their senator. And then in the governor's race, the following year, I unseated a sitting Republican governor, which is unheard of, really, in your own party. And I just clobbered him. I just, it was a landslide. I got 490,000 votes to his 410,000 votes. During that time, I was talked about as a Republican. In fact, we just dug up some clips from MSNBC and the others where they admit, they don't like to admit it, but they're, it's a way for them to also kind of attack the Republicans, how that my issues had become mainstream Republican issues today, such as the immigration issue, the amnesty issue.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, back then, I was very much critical of Reagan's amnesty, which I think was a terrible mistake and a terrible betrayal of our people by Ronald Reagan, which led to the amnesty that you're now trying to portray. I also had the same issues, in fact, long before Donald Trump, on free trade, the same issues on preserving our heritage here in this country, our values, our culture, the same issues, not the same issues, he doesn't talk about it much, but the incredible entitlement programs and welfare programs that are bankrupting this country and causing the high taxes and really the destruction of the European American people. They didn't usually headline me back then as former Klansman. Even then, I was a Republican member of the House of Representatives. My mm-hmm. bills were passed by fellow Republicans. In fact, I passed the only anti-affirmative action bill that prohibited racial discrimination in these affirmative action programs or any such in hiring or promotions or scholarships. And it was overwhelmingly passed by my legislative body, the House, by both Republicans, in fact, every Republican voted for it, and by Democrats overwhelmingly.
Mm-hmm.
And but now here we go further out now, 40 years later, and it's like it's part of my name, former KKK something or other. and then they tried to smear Donald Trump for saying simply that I said to my people that I think we should vote for him, that I'm not going to endorse him because I can't endorse the man completely. I can't endorse every position that he's stated. We can talk about that in the program. But I said, we need to vote for him. It's a strategic vote because basically Donald Trump has become a referendum for European Americans, whether or not we want to save our people, our rights, our heritage, our nation. It's really a referendum on America and the founding values of this country. And the truth is that Donald Trump today in America is a referendum on saving the entire world, even Europe too. He's the only candidate. The only major candidate who has ever, or the only major political figure in America other than myself, I guess, I still won, I imagine, who's literally condemned Merkel and saying how she's betrayed and that this massive immigration is destroying Europe.
Yep, that's right.
Trump today, and of course, I know this is recorded, people hear it in a few days, but he's today in Bloomington. I listened to a live feed of his speech. The first thing he said to the great crowd, which was overwhelmingly European American, he said something that we've said for so many years: we've got to take our country back. And that's a message. That's a really clear message to our people. And the last thing I'll say, and then I'll shut up and get some questions from you guys. The last thing I'll say is he's also, and this is what's so odd about it, He's also become kind of a referendum on the Jewish-controlled media. There's no candidate that's ever gotten up and said, you know, 90% of the media are liars, and the media are the enemy of the American people, and the enemy, the media is a lying, disgusting, corrupt media, which, of course, is overwhelmingly Jewish. He's the only guy that's actually got up in front of some of the big Jewish donors who totally control both Republican and Democratic fundraising and said, you're not going to support me. I know that because I won't take your money and you want to control those people. He's also the only person, and maybe this wasn't wise politically. You don't have to wave that red flag in front of the bull. They already hate him, though, forever, who gave a lot of lip service to Israel. Then he said, but I want to be an honest broker. I want to be neutral in this fight. I mean, that's unheard of. And of course, immediately he was attacked. So he's even becoming a referendum. The Jewish power structure, the Jewish establishment in this country has made it so, but his vote total is almost becoming a referendum on the Zio-communist. Boy, it sounds so funny to say Zionist and communist, but that's epitomized by Sanders, right? A guy open communist before, and he was also an open Zionist before. He went to a kibbutz in Israel, a communist kibbutz, and supports even the Israel massacre at Gaza. So, you know, this is a referendum. And so strategically, it's so important for us to vote for Trump. The better he does, and I think he's energizing our people, and that's the fundamental reason why I told my people to vote for him. But it's so odd that he's condemned, right? Because even though he's never supported me. He's even criticized me a few years ago in the Reform Party. It's so amazing that the hypocrisy of these people saying Donald Trump's an evil guy because I've simply told my people to vote for him, when at the same time they're doing this, they talk to Bernie Sanders every day, and he is a former communist. We can get the details of that on the program in a bit, but he's an open former Trotskyite communist who is an elector for a full-fledged communist organization, the Socialist Workers' Party, that worships Trotsky, that calls themselves communist. And they never introduce him as former communist Bernie Sanders or current Marxist socialist, which is what he is, which he's never renounced, for the presidency of the United States. The hypocrisy is amazing.
Now, how do you respond to people, other fellow pro-whites, that say, well, Trump's actually a pawn for the Jews?
Well, that's an important point, and there's going to be some people who do it. I really believe that the Jews act very strategically, and sometimes we have to act strategically. There's no question. I mean, nobody can argue about the fact that the great weight of the Jewish establishment is extremely hateful. I mean, they're almost violent. They're encouraging so much hatred against Trump that the Secret Service just recently came out that the threat level to Trump is higher than at any time in American history for a presidential candidate. Much higher, by the way, three times higher, they said, than the threat level for Obama when he got elected. And there was a lot of anger, of course, about Obama. Three times higher. And they even say they don't have enough money to protect them because of the threat level that's involved here. The Jewish establishment is, you know, the knives are out. We know that for a fact. They're pulling out all steps. I wouldn't be surprised. And I'm not one of these kind of conspiracy people think everything's a conspiracy, but I wouldn't be surprised if these Jewish trolls in Israel, these Zionist trolls, are flooding the internet with stuff saying, yeah, but Trump is, you know, he's got Jewish relatives in a sense because his daughter married a Jewish guy, and he's really an agent for the Jews. He gives lip service to the Jews because they know that a vote for Trump right now is a vote that's kind of rejecting that because he's called an anti-Semite or he's called as an enemy of Israel by all the other Republican candidates, by the media constantly. So a vote for him is kind of a way to say people it's okay to oppose the power of the Jewish elite, the Jewish establishment that's destroying our people and driving our people to extinction in this country and in Europe.
So it's not all of Trump's policies that this is about. Obviously, we about where he stands on every single issue. We frankly don't even know where he is on every single issue yet. But he's, in my view, he's kind of becoming a symbol for the disenfranchised people in America. It's about what he now represents. It's beyond him as a person and a candidate. He is becoming a symbol. And I think the media pundits on CNN and Fox News, MSNBC, all the others, they know this. They know to a certain extent that this is about the white people in America that are trying to regain. They've even rephrased his "Make America Great Again" to saying, you know, "Make America White Again." Right. So this is what it is. The establishment are, I think, terrified of Donald Trump because they don't control him in the way they control the other candidates.
Well, they're certainly afraid, and if they're afraid, then I'm encouraged. They're afraid that he'll be his own man. But, you know, who knows the pressure that's going to happen. We have no guarantee that Donald Trump is going to do what he says about the border, or he's going to support or tell Europe once he's president, you know, protect your borders, you idiots, you know?
Yeah.
Imagine you have a president that builds a wall, and then he says to the European people, you know, said, are you crazy to let these massive numbers of aliens and non-Europeans into your country that are going to basically overwhelm you in a democratic system and totally change the face of your society, make you a tiny minority, not just a minority, but ultimately a tiny minority in the nation where you've dwelled for literally tens of thousands of years and where you created this magnificent and beautiful civilization and culture, and technology, and art, and literature, and music, and architecture, that these people are going to be wiped from the earth. This is the greatest moral human rights crime in the history of the world, this attempt to destroy the European people. And imagine if he were president and he said this. And we have no guarantee he's going to do that, but we do know that all the other candidates, both Republican and Democrat, are totally in their hand. And they might not like some of the things. I don't think they like the evangelical tone of Trump, of Cruz,
yeah.
Which I think is just basically a device he's using, you know, to try to get a certain segment, which he ended up losing anyway. But they might not like some of that, and they can't stand in the Senate, you know, his character, because he's such a lying SOB. You know, it's unbelievable. The guy is such a bald-faced, disgusting liar and underhanded person. But you know, they're massive amounts of Jewish money have come behind Ted Cruz. So that tells me something. And we have to be careful about some of the conspiracy theories and say, well, this is all some sort of conspiracy, because they don't need Donald Trump to fulfill the Zionist agenda. They're doing it right now. And this guy is literally telling European Americans and others that, you know, we need to speak out about some of these things, and that we have to say the truth, and we have to go against political correctness. So it's a very, very encouraging thing. And that's why I'm saying that we have to cast a strategic vote for him. It doesn't mean we have to close our eyes. It doesn't mean we should accept him as our savior, because, you know, he might do incredible things. He might do terrible things as president. But whatever happens, it's kind of changing the discourse, and it's making it okay. So not only are his issues important, like immigration, trade issues, keeping the American and European culture, even like saying we're going to bring back Merry Christmas again. That's all good. But also simply the fact that he speaks in a way that's telling us to speak. I'll make one caveat there. And I'm sorry if I'm droning too long.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
But I'll make a caveat there. I think the guy has very little political experience. He's pretty good at making a deal and dealing with people individually. I think he's made and continues to make a lot of mistakes. When these communists and other disruptors, Bernie Sanderites, attacked his meetings and so forth, he didn't have to say, well, yeah, the good old days, we used to, you know, beat them up, you know, and that's how he had the old days. He's given them a lot of fodder. He'd have been much better off in saying, yeah, we're going to defend ourselves. Obviously, we're going to defend our rights. Our First Amendment rights are here. But he's you know, he doesn't seem to understand how some of the things that he says is going to be turned around and made it into a ploy. Like, for instance, the media totally, even Fox News, and Fox News is as bad as the rest. Megyn Kelly was saying basically Trump's responsible for these communists attacking his meetings because it was it's ridiculous. But, you know, it's like, he doesn't seem to understand some of those things. And I think I understood it. Of course, they went harder on me because of my Klan background. But, he has to be the opposite of that rhetoric. And he has to, if he would have just quietly said, you know, and he did that at first, which was smart to say, you know, don't hurt him, you know, but they're not going to have a right to take away my freedom of speech as a candidate for the presidency of the United States. That's a basic American right. And they're not going to take your right, you 25,000 people in this hall, to also hear a candidate of the United States, you know, in a room that we paid for in this campaign, in a room that we have a right to speak and undisturbed and uninterrupted, just as they do. We're not going to their meetings. So I think he said some things that really haven't gone over very well. I think that he says some things, maybe some people resonate to waterboarding and torture, but I think there's a much bigger section of the country that looks at you by saying you need waterboarding or even worse than torture. I think a lot of people say, well, I can never vote for someone that says he's for torture or for, say, killing the women and children, the families of our enemies in the battlefield. That may resonate, again, among some, but I think in a longer way, it doesn't really help him. You can talk very tough against ISIS. You can talk very tough about defending our rights. But I don't believe in waterboarding. I don't believe in torture. And I don't think that's the European way. And I think most Europeans don't believe in it, especially in Europe, even more than here. And I think when you talk that way, what you do is you alienate a huge section of our people who need to be convinced that we have the moral high ground here, which we do. And in terms of our immigration, in terms of our rights, in terms of our heritage, in terms of our human right to exist. And so it ends up alienating a lot of the people you need to reach to finally get that majority and win the presidency or create a massive movement that can take our countries back and save Europe and save America and save the world.
You know, later we'll talk about the other candidates, of course, the shutdown in Chicago, the attempt to whatever he actually attempted to do, this Tommy DiMaggio at the Ohio rally. Did he try to assassinate him or just hurt him? We don't know at this point. But there are many issues, other issues that are kind of following along, dragged along from his campaign, just him running and speaking. It shows the, as you said, David, the dishonesty of the media. It shows, I think, the true hatred for just white European Americans. That's really coming out here. And the other aspect is that they seem to resent the fact that Donald actually is taking a strong position on some of these things as well. They resent strength, the determination. They try to say that this is somehow, you know, neo-fascism. And they're literally comparing him to Hitler. And of course, not the real Hitler, but the Hollywood version of Hitler. So I just find this extraordinary that all of this is just coming out right now.
Well, it's going to come out more and more. And if he wins the Republican nomination or as he approaches it, it's going to escalate. And it's going to be a chance for the media to have months and months and months of the most vicious conditioning of people. And I know people can say, well, these attack videos and the attack commercials aren't going to have an impact, but they know how to do this. For instance, what they're doing, they always attack on a bunch of multiple levels. I've gone through this in my campaigns. You notice how they've attacked Donald Trump. On one hand, he's this terrible, racist, radical right winger. And then on the other hand, they say he's not a real conservative.
Exactly.
You know, it's hilarious. And so they know how to go to every little segment and say that, or that he's not a real Christian, or that he used to boast about sleeping with a lot of beautiful women, you know.
And he's not a successful businessman, right? But, oh, of course, he has billions, you know. Yeah.
So they try to put into the different areas they do, and these things have impact. Remember that videos are so powerful. That's something that we're learning, and you're putting out some great videos at Red Ice, and your stuff is fantastic. Alana, your stuff recently has been amazing. And I think it's so important
you,
what
David.
You're doing, by the way, in terms of your outreach to the women of our race and our heritage who we have to reach out to. We have to make sure that they understand that we are on their side, and they've got to be on our side if they want to be protected, if they don't want to be abused or raped or harmed, if they want their children to be have a good society and a good life and a future. I think that Donald Trump has got his great popularity because he's talked tough, but the stuff about Rubio being a little guy, you know, that's like a double-edged sword because I'm not a little guy. I mean, I'm 6'2". Trump's 6'3" or 6'4", you know. But the truth is that most people aren't so tall like he is, aren't big. And it's like a big guy saying, you know, you're small, you're little, you're short. Therefore, this, you know, there's a lot of people out there who are fairly short in stature, and they don't like to hear this stuff. I mean, it's almost like they're being degraded, and this is not smart politics. You can say to Rubio, you know, you're a traitor to America, to your people, to your heritage, to your country. You supported amnesty. You can say the same thing to Cruz. You're a liar who supported amnesty, legalization. But when you go into personal, like, attacks on your physical nature, like what he did to Fiona when he, you know, talked about her face, how ugly it was, you imagine on a dollar bill, you know. And I think a lot of people who don't like this, and I'll tell you another thing, a lot of people don't like braggadocious people who get up there and say, I'm so great and I'm so wonderful and I'm the best and, you know, all this stuff. It's one thing to say, yes, I've got a successful business and I can do this. It's another thing to just basically act like a big braggart. People don't like that. And but I think they're still for him in spite of that fact, simply because he spoke out on things like the border, things like the trade, other critical issues. And so because of that, they're kind of giving a pass.
Well, you know, I think it shows that he is a rogue element, to be honest, because if this was planned from behind, they would never dare to do something like this. I mean, go on talking about hand sizes and stuff like that, as opposed to actually, you know, turning around and talking about some of the real issues. But the question is, if they, I mean, they've already turned up the heat on Trump, of course, but I think there's much more they can do in this aspect. The question is, will these smear campaigns actually work? Or, because this is, again, it's a double-edged sword, right? This could turn the other way. It could basically show that the majority of Americans, at least European Americans, might side with Trump, which to them then is going to reveal really the dishonesty of the media and the fact that they will actually lose credibility if they do this, which is a huge gamble for them and the future of them as an institution, an establishment.
Well, one thing they've done, for instance, is in their attempts to attack Trump, which didn't work. I mean, they came out with 2 weeks. I was in the headlines for 2 weeks, 21,000 articles, according to Google News, of Donald Trump, KKK, David Duke. And the interesting thing is it had no effect. In fact, right after that, he surged in the polls. And in Louisiana, my neighboring state of Mississippi, where everybody knows me in Mississippi, he literally got as much votes as all the other candidates combined. So this really had no effect at all. And then, of course, and then the last time he did even better. And he's really set to do better, actually, I think on Tuesday than before. So the effect of all this attack, comparing him to me, didn't work. But guess what? It rehabilitated me in a lot of ways. Because the media said, well, if David Duke promotes Trump or they're lying about Trump, so they would go to my site. Hundreds of thousands of people have seen my videos now. The response to these videos of these hundreds of thousands of people is overwhelmingly positive. We're talking about 85 to 90% positive. And universally, if you look at the comments on the videos, it's just overwhelmingly positive, saying, well, I didn't know much about you. I'm too young. But man, you are great. You know, you set the way for Trump and blah, blah, blah. So what they've done was they rehabilitated the entire movement for the preservation of European mankind, because when they start looking at our stuff and our material, like going to Red Eyes Radio and radio and the radio that Atlanta does, if they're looking at that and they're saying, hey, we got to reevaluate this stuff because this is true. They are in a war against European mankind, and they're in a war to destroy our people, annihilate our people in Europe and America. And there's no getting around that.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw this morning, but Carl Bernstein, he was just on CNN. He was saying that we need to start actively. He was saying this is a new thing that the media needs to start doing. They need to have roundtables on what fascism is, because American fascism is rising and Trump is ushering it in. So basically, if you simply are against illegal immigration, they're trying to tell you that that is fascism now.
Oh, yeah. If you just, you know, it's like the Black Lives Matter movement, for instance. I mean, they had a Democratic candidate, as you know, who in one kind of talk off the cuff, they asked him, one of the Black Lives Matter people said, well, what about Black Lives Matter? He says, yes, Black lives do matter. And he said, ultimately, of course, all lives matter. And for that, he was crucified. You know, he didn't even say white lives matter. He just said, you know, he said, because a person could come back and say, yes, you're right, Black lives matter, white lives matter, all lives matter. He was crucified and had to apologize for saying that all lives matter. This is racism, vicious racism. And, you know, when people come to us, and this is typical, you know, conservative, cuck-servative stuff, they'll say stuff like, America's not racist, you know. We live in a racist society. In defending themselves against the black racist and the media that's always claiming this. The truth is, of course, what we should be saying is, yes, you're right. America is extremely racist. It's a hateful racist society. It's a hateful racist media. And it's hateful against white people in this country.
Yeah, yeah.
Against European Americans. You know, and it's obvious. And but people, you know, there's no question this campaign of Trump is waking up a lot of people. It's making people go to all these videos. And with the social media we have now, like my Twitter, I was literally number four trending in the world on Twitter. And I just started Twitter about 3 months ago, really, seriously. And I had a Twitter account, but never used it much. I guess I'm one of these old fogies that aren't so used to it. I had a young guy help me with it. And we went to number four trending in the world. And I don't know if you know how important that is. Most of the people who listen to Twitter and watch it or pay attention to it know what that means. But it means of all the tweets and the things, the discussions on the world, my tweets and all were the most watched of any other tweet in the world, save four. Now, this is Twitter, which has 1.5 billion people on Twitter on planet Earth. And I was number four. That's amazing. And we have a social media now. We can make our own videos like you're doing, and your videos are wonderful. And this is a change. So now people can get the story, and they're getting the story. So it's done a lot of good for me. It's done a lot of good for our cause.
Yeah, well, that's it. He's breaking that open in that regard. What was did the CNN pundit there, Lana, did they talk about like the, it was basically out of Adorno's authoritarian personality?
Oh, yeah, it reminded me of Theodore Adorno. Basically, you know, they were saying that it's a problem. Carl Bernstein was saying that Americans are drawn to this strong authoritarian man. It's a threat. It's a problem. So if you're a strong authoritarian man, you are now a fascist as well.
Which shows that they want weak people, right, in the country. They don't want strength. They don't want anybody to assert any kind of level of determination or strong opinions one way or another. It's extraordinary, isn't it, David?
Well, they want strong, radical, Marxist-style feminists like Hillary Clinton. You know, they definitely want strong people for their side of the equation. They sure don't want strong people who speak on behalf of America. And really, the point is that when we speak as European Americans for the preservation of our people in this country, what you're really speaking for is America, and they recognize that. I'll give you another example of the media. You know, the other day, of course, you had this guy, try to rush and attack Donald Trump. And it turns out the guy's name is, Miasimo? Is that?
Yeah, DiMassimo, I think. Tommy DiMassimo, yeah.
DiMassimo, yeah, DiMassimo, something like that. I don't watch enough television to get all the pronunciations correct.
Did they even bring him up that much, though, to be honest?
Yeah, this is the guy. So he attacks Donald Trump, and it's easy to find out who he is. He has a Twitter account under the name. He took down his big controversial quotes where he said he wanted to be a martyr. You know, he's going to attack Trump, and he wanted to go out and fight. He took down his Twitters where he talked about hating white people, how we should all hate white people.
Yeah. Some of his videos were taken down.
And there was a video. I mean, he's got a video which was put up by him and his supporters or whatever with Arabic and with the ISIS logos, right, which they put up. Wasn't people attacking him, where they show him dragging an American flag on the ground and stomping and then laying the flags down, and he and a bunch of African Americans are walking and stomping on the American flag, right? So this is pretty amazing stuff, folks. And yet I looked this morning, in fact, I made a check on Google News, which has a lot of the thousands of mainstream sites. They don't let my site be on Google News. They probably wouldn't let you be on Google News. But so I looked at it. There's nothing about this guy. The only way you could find out about the tweets and the Twitter stuff is to go directly if you know how to find him. His name wasn't even in the media. He was let out. He attacks the guy that's running for president, which is, by the way, a federal crime if you're either a president or you're running for president. I have once had Secret Service protection myself when I was in that race in 1992. It's a federal crime. And guess what? You know, it's like
they let him go
out of prison, and if they let him out of jail in a few hours without even fully vetting him, you know, they just let him out.
Amazing. Imagine if it was another candidate, Hillary.
Imagine if it was
Bernie.
A white guy.
Yeah.
Now here's another point about the anti-white racism. This guy has gone just did a tweet a few days earlier talking about, you know, it's time for, you know, it's good to be hating white people. That's his words, hating white people, right? Now imagine if somebody put out a tweet about hating black people who'd attacked a black person or a black candidate or even Hillary Clinton or this communist Bernie Sanders.
Coming from the Trump camp? Oh my God.
Could you imagine? Yeah. Could you imagine? And this guy was a Bernie Sanders supporter, by the way.
Yeah.
Openly. Could you imagine the media cacophony, you know? And this guy would be sitting under the jail charge with the penalties that could get him 40 years in prison, you know, trying to inflict harm, you know, against a U.S. presidential candidate. Yet there was no discussion. And I think there's two reasons for that. One is they don't want the narrative to the public that this is really anti-whiteism. I tell you, here's a question. We've all heard that, you know, anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. Well, the truth is anti-Trump today is a code word for anti-white.
That's what it's become. Yep, true. Well, you know, the other issue here is that he, on some issues, it, frankly, isn't that, you know, strong, to be honest. I mean, he says nothing about, of course, diminishing or stopping legal immigration, right? He welcomes it. He's talked about that. He's simply talking about illegal immigration. And despite that, they're just up in arms about the fact that he even dares to bring this up. And people look at what happened in Chicago. I guess we can go into that now and talk a bit about the massive protesters and the amount of people that turned up that literally thinks that he wants to, like, lynch blacks and, like, you know, get rid of all the Mexicans or something. It's
well, he also
ridiculous.
Said that, well, he has talked a bit about it because he said we're going to take them all out of the country and then only those that come back in that we can comfortably, assume or comfortably absorb this kind of thing and who are not threats to the country and who would be a positive thing to the country. So he's talked about that a bit. And he's also even talked against, he's kind of softened that a little bit, but he still talks about that. He talked about the other night about HB1 visas, which are taking American jobs. And he says, well, to a degree, if there's something where you need a demand, you can do it. Of course, I'm opposed to that too as well. But he has talked about it. And remember, he's made an alliance, even had Ann Coulter speak in many of his speeches. And Ann Coulter, to her credit, in her book and in her tweets, she talks about some of the ethnic issues in the United States.
She does.
In fact, it was a really amazing, and I was kind of amazed by it. But she didn't defend me directly, but she did a whole article on me and the attack upon me and Trump, pointing out that I haven't done any of the things. And she points out that I was out of the Klan years ago, that I've never done anything such as Al Sharpton has done, you know, never promoted violence like these other guys. And basically it was a defense of not only Donald Trump, but myself. And she absolutely says that legal immigration is a danger just like illegal immigration. So,
again, true.
I also believe in an evolutionary concept of moving people over and moving the paradigm over. And that's what Trump's doing. He's moving the paradigm over. And so I think that we're kind of in an evolutionary thought mode here.
Ann Coulter actually shared one of our articles on Facebook. It was actually the piece that she had written about you. We made a few comments on it and put it up on her site, and she had shared it on her Facebook. I was really surprised by that.
Well, it's good. Good. Maybe she's paying attention to certain things, huh? So who was the other KKK member that was buddies with the Clintons, by the way?
Well, you know, well, let's take a look at this. I mean, again, this just shows the ridiculousness of the media. There's been a lot of KKK people in the course of the 20th century who were heroes to the left and to the country. Harry Truman in academia is one of the most respected presidents in the United States. I don't have that much respect for him in terms of a lot of things he did. But the truth is he was a former Klansman. If he joined, you know, pretty late in life, he joined 10 years after I left the Klan as a young man. He joined as a sitting judge to the KKK. He became president of the United States, but there's no article saying former KKK guy Harry Truman. There was also Harry Byrd.
Byrd, yeah, that's
who
right.
Who was appointed and supported by Obama and Hillary and Teddy Kennedy to become the leader of the United States Senate. Now, this guy was in the Klan a decade after I was in his life, and he literally, even 20 years into his service in the Senate and so forth, he, in the 1960s, filibustered against the Civil Rights Act and everything. And Clinton, of course, did an obituary type thing for on Robert Byrd and said he was a mentor and one of the greatest men in the world. So what is the problem? Is the problem the fact that I was once in the KKK, in the KKK group, you know, 4 decades ago, a lot earlier in my life than Robert Byrd? Or is the problem that I didn't become a leftist Democrat or some sort of Zionist, right? You know, what is the problem? So this thing is totally disingenuous. In fact, and I talked about this in the latest video, here you have Van Jones, who is a commentator, a paid big bucks commentator on CNN, who is a former communist. He was a former communist a lot more recently than I was in the Klan. In fact, when I was a Republican, a leading Republican figure in the United States of America in 1991, 92, 93, Van Jones was then an open, avowed, calling himself a radical communist. He was also arrested for violence against police and so forth. So there you go. And yet he comes on the air. He's not identified. He's not introduced by CNN as our paid consultant, former communist, Van Jones. He spouts vicious anti-white racism every day on the air.
Yes.
In fact, when Clinton and Bernie Sanders got up there calling, you know, Trump a racist simply because I said I was going to vote for him, which is the most tenuous kind of connection you could imagine, calling him a racist because of that, they were getting a radical, former radical communist to tell us how racist this guy is, you know, Trump is. Well, and this guy spouts racist hatred against whites every day, that all whites are racist. And as you know, racist is the most damaging, the most horrible, the most hateful epithet in the world. It's a lot more hateful and has a lot more powerful than the N-word, frankly. In fact, if someone uses the N-word, the people use it, they'll be the one condemned and they'll get tremendous, and anybody who's used against it will get tremendous sympathy. But racism is the worst epithet you can use, and yet they wholesale accuse white America, white people, America itself as a, quote, racist nation. So the hypocrisy is legend. But we're able to refute that now because we have things social media and we have this program.
I wish I took some of those excerpts. We were watching a bit of it, Lon, on CNN. The whole panel, and it's like night after night they come back to it, and the anti-white rhetoric is just unbelievable. I got to start taking down some of these clips so we can play it and refute it and actually openly discuss it. It's remarkable.
Yeah, and so they have former communists, and they never introduced. And one thing I did on a recent video, and I'm doing it again, I'm making a very powerful video now, which shows Bernie Sanders was, you know, people. I after I did my video I said that he was a former communist, and I got all these comments after my videos from these people, not knowing. I mean, a lot of them are leftists, a lot of them just moderates, or just average Americans. And saying, that's not true. Why would you lie about that? He was a socialist, but he wasn't a communist per se. And of course, the fact is, for your listeners, if they don't know it, this is great to use with your friends and family. Bernie Sanders was literally a vice presidential elector, actually, for an openly communist party, the Socialist Workers Party. Not only, now he says he wasn't a member, you know, years later, but he was an elector. That's even higher than a member. I mean, he literally was an elector for a communist candidate, the Socialist Workers Party, which is openly communist, openly Trotskyite, all right, a communist party. And the candidate was also an open communist by the name of Pulley, black guy communist. And he was the elector for him for vice president of the United States of America. And he's admitted to be. And you know where I got this? Deeply buried in an article in the Washington Post called, what was the name of it? Bernie Sanders, reluctant socialist, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
Reluctant socialist. But they mention here the fact is that he was an elector for the Communist Party.
Wow, remarkable. And they never charge him on that again. I mean, imagine if it was the other side, of course, to the opposition of communism. God, that we'd never end hearing about it. But in this case, it's fine. They just let it go. They don't recognize the history of communism, how many people they have, how much blood of people they have on their hands. If they just let it go, they just don't touch it at all, and that's really what where the crime lies, if you will, by omission, by not telling the viewer the real backstory.
Well, and even Bernie Sanders admitted, and we'll talk about Chicago a bit, but Bernie Sanders admitted that most of these protesters were you know, we're his supporters.
Now, right? I heard from, it was an exclusive, I think it was actually Alex Jones did it, but we had this gentleman on a couple of years ago, Roger Stone. He's actually involved in Trump's campaign in one way or another. He's not, you know, he talks regularly with Trump and stuff like that. And he said they had some proof that it was actually Hillary that had done this, but they tried to pin it on Bernie supporters. I don't know if that's true, but he actually did present some of the details of that, and they're still investigating that, which would be interesting, of course.
So here we have these thousands of protesters that intimidated, screamed epithets at people, threatened their lives, threatened their children, threatened the women there with rape. I mean, all this is documented. They come out, they basically are violent, and then, of course, Hillary Clinton gets up and says, well, you got to stand up to a bully, meaning it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, now, when is Donald Trump ever organized or promoted, you know, forays into Bernie Sanders, this former communist meeting? And he's currently, let's make it clear now, Bernie Sanders is a Marxist socialist. He doesn't reject Marxism. He doesn't reject the core ideology of Marxism. And yet, you know, Trump has never suggested, and this Trump people aren't disrupting Hillary meetings or Sanders meetings and so forth. And but they're calling Trump a bully, so it's okay to go in there and restrict his freedom of speech. And why isn't the media screaming about this around the world, saying, you know, this is our fundamental America, this is what America is supposed to be all about. Freedom of speech is considered the cornerstone right of the American people. And if you don't have the freedom of speech when you're running for president of the United States to speak, yeah, and speak in an atmosphere where you can be heard and you can make your points in your own meeting, which you paid for. If you don't have that right, then no American has any right. Then America is not about freedom of speech anymore. And if you have a right to go in there and restrict other people's rights, what has America become? And the truth is, and this is another good example, this is nothing that's waking up America. I'm making this point. I know you're making this point. We've got to make the point that Bernie Sanders, a Marxist socialist, former radical communist, at the least former, if not concurrent, all right, won a number of Democratic primaries for president of the United States. This has happened for two reasons. One is the media is in control of people who have the same ideology as Bernie Sanders. And second, the demographic change in America. And that's what immigration is all about. If we change the demographics of America, like the Democratic Party, which is exactly where we're going, we're literally going to have radical communists, and Bernie Sanders is just the beginning of that.
Yes, yeah,
that's what's coming in America.
Yeah, I mean, I sense he's trailblazing for an America with gulags in the future to a certain extent. You know,
well, that's what it's all about, right? What's the Black Lives Matter movement? They're also communists that support. Now, the Black Lives Matter leaders that actually support and lionize a black guy who's sought for the FBI for murdering a police officer, you know?
Yeah.
They've shut down universities and free speech at universities, the communists regularly. In America 30 years ago, I spoke about at least 40 universities across America, even back in my Klan days and after. And now I can't speak at a university. 10 years ago, even, I could go on a talk show where they'd invite me on a CNN program or, Fox News. I can't say I haven't been on anything. I've been on maybe one or two shows. But here I was at the top of the news cycle. I mean, my name and Donald Trump are side by side, yet not one of these myriad talk shows on CNN, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, Fox News, not one of them said, well, let's bring David Duke on and say, well, did you endorse Trump? And why did you endorse Trump? And why do you think white people are supporting Trump? You know, why do you think, you know, what is the, you know, none of that. Doesn't that seem to be like a legitimate journalistic exercise to bring the guy on who's at the center of the question? It wasn't like I was on the moon. It wasn't like they couldn't pick up a phone.
Yeah. No, we know they don't want to hear you speak because it might make sense to some people, you know. So, but you know,
you know, they don't want me to speak because I will just cream them. I will totally destroy their narrative and show the bunch of hypocrite liars that they are.
you know, Sanders is going for a populist anti-Wall Street rhetoric, and which, of course, you know, we can agree with. But it's interesting because he never says who the people are who control the banks, right? It's very appropriate that he, who has spoken very fondly of his Jewish heritage, is serving as the most organized opposition to the banksters in America today.
Yeah, he just wants to turn it over to a bunch of Jewish government bureaucrats. And it's the same communist con job that we've seen, you know, in the Soviet Union and in Eastern Europe and in the revolutions throughout Europe during the 20th century. It's the same con job. You know, it's like, there's a lot of exploitation in these banks and we shouldn't have politics with all this money. And yet the truth is, whether you're a communist by name, like Bernie has been, or communist by ideology, like Clinton, who sound just like Bernie, by the way, today, whether you do that, it's still the same result. And the interesting thing is, why hasn't the media, if they're concerned really about racism, why haven't they mentioned the fact that Bernie Sanders has not only been a communist, but he's also a Jewish racist supremacist? Bernie Sanders went and traveled and lived in Israel for a good while. And guess where he went to in Israel? He went to a huge communist. And I'm saying that word, communist kibbutz, right?
All of them were in the beginning, yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, and they still are. Yeah. They still got pictures of Karl Marx everywhere and Lenin and everybody else, you know, and Trotsky and the whole bit. And this was a kibbutz that celebrated Joseph Stalin when he died. You know, gave him a big honoring ceremony. This is all fact. And here is Bernie. He's supposed to be the progressive thing, and he's for the rights of all people and so forth. And a lot of progressives say that they're for Palestinians. But here's Bernie Sanders in the United States Senate, basically defending Israel's massacre. I mean, massacre. 25,000 Palestinian men, women, and children. At least 7,000 to 8,000 Palestinian children who were either killed, maimed, lost legs, limbs, eyesight, burned horribly, disfigured, you know, made home, 100,000 people made homeless, total devastation. And Bernie defended what Israel did, the horror that they did against the Palestinians. He supported the massive, you know, billions of dollars going to Israel while he's talking about all the poor people in America who don't have enough head. We're going to send it to rich Israel, right?
Yeah.
We're going to send it to this terrorist state of Israel. The guy is a complete and total phony. But like most Jews, he can cleverly speak and he can act like he's on your side, just like the Russian communist Jews in Russia who told the workers, you know, all you have to do is break your chains and be free. And then they supported, or some of them, a certain percentage supported the communists. And then they ended up in gulags. If they ended up losing any property they had, they end up losing all freedom to speak, to assemble, to do anything in that country, and they faced horrific repression and oppression and human rights violations.
Remarkable, you know. Let's talk about Chicago a bit. The violation, of course, of the First Amendment here is very interesting. Disruption of a political event that's basically designed to let the people hear a political candidate. And it's interesting because the media, again, tried actually to pin this on Trump, that somehow he is guilty. We had people like David Gergen, you know, well-connected
Yale, I heard him say that.
Yeah, Yale, Ivy League, Aspen Institute, all these, you know.
Is he Jewish?
I don't think he is, actually. You know, but he's sitting on CNN blaming Trump for actually picking the University of Illinois. Like, you know, he's not actually allowed to speak in the area he wants because this was a bad move.
Yeah, how dare Trump go to the third largest city in the United States of America and actually go in there and speak? How dare him He's running
his
for president,
fault.
But don't go in Chicago. Don't you understand that Chicago doesn't have your political view, so you're not allowed to speak. And if you go speak there, then they have a right to shut you down. I mean, that's what he was saying.
It's such a diverse city. He's repeated it over and over again on the coverage. You know, it's so diverse here. It's a diversity, which just goes to show that, well, with diversity, you can't have peace and you can't have tolerance and you can't have difference of opinion then.
But Chicago has awful crime. It's a hideous city to live in.
Of course. There was actually one shot. A black guy reportedly was shot, a Trump supporter, that same night.
Well, let's talk about diversity a second in relation to Chicago. And this is the message. They always say diversity and all that stuff. Well, it is diverse, but it's not fully diverse because it's a diversity that tries to destroy the majority of the population's rights, the European Americans who were there, and who were trying to suppress the rights, including the right of even someone like Donald Trump, or the European Americans of that city, or anybody else in that city, for that matter, who wants to hear Donald Trump or vote for Donald Trump. I mean, the hypocrisy of this is amazing. When they say diversity, they obviously don't mean diversity. Because they don't want any diversity of opinion. They don't want any diversity on these critical issues. They don't want any diversity of thought, even. And so the whole thing's a lie. You know, I believe in diversity, and the real diversity in this planet is where you let each people, each heritage, preserve their own way of life, their own values, and they have their own sovereignty, and not have a globalist, you know, forced diversity within countries that only causes hatred and division and violence and destruction.
Well, you know, they're pushing out white people in many of these areas. We're already a minority in the world, and despite this, they keep repeating this, that somehow, you know, oh, this, it's so diverse. And frankly, with the tactic that they're taking with this, in one or two generations, if this continues as it is, it would just be one people. It'll be a monoculture. It won't be diverse. In fact, what they love to show so much on the media with interracial marriages and mixed people and stuff like that, we'll all end up looking the same, thinking the same, acting the same, and it's antithetical to the concept of diversity.
Yeah, and how do they get away with calling Donald Trump racist by the common definition of racism, or even David Duke, me, as a racist? Because I believe in the right of all people to preserve themselves and to defend their basic human rights and present their nations and their independence and so forth. And Trump hasn't said anything that he doesn't agree with that. And then you have a Hillary Clinton who wouldn't dare say that white lives matter. That's racism. Because if you say that white lives don't matter, basically there can't be any more racist thing. If anybody else said black lives don't matter, my God, the hypocrisy of this is just absolutely incredible. Look at Bernie Sanders in the speech he did, this former communist. He said, white people don't know what poverty is, what poor means. And white people don't, maybe he said if you grew up in a society where you could be hassled on the street, or that are you dragged out of cars, you know, that, you know, white people don't have to worry about that. Is he joking? Is he, it's just amazing to think about it. Over the last 10 years, we'll just take 10 years of our history. In the last 10 years, there have been hundreds of thousands, millions even, I mean, truthfully, millions of white people who've been at the minimum hassled, you know, by blacks and black criminals and having situations when they just walk home to their car from where they park, or in their neighborhood or in a mixed neighborhood, have been hassled by blacks. Thousands of white people have been pulled out of their cars, I mean, including hijacking, robbery, assault, or whatever. Far more white people have been pulled out of their cars by black assailants than black people have been pulled out of their cars by police. And even among police, I can guarantee you, the facts are clear. You know, tens of thousands more white people, for one reason or another, have been pulled out of their cars by police than black people. So hundreds of thousands more white people have suffered assault, murder, all right, rape. You know, hundreds of thousands in the last 10 years, more than black people have suffered from those things from white people. I mean, the hypocrisy is amazing. I don't condemn all black people for that. You know, I want to find a way that they have a better life and they have even less crime in their own areas and they commit less crime against us. But the fact is, if you really want to talk about, if you want to make a scoreboard of what white people do, how many blacks have been killed, proven unjustly by the police, or whether policemen that made a mistake or did something directly wrong or intentionally wrong. What, a few dozen?
Yeah.
We've had tens of thousands of white people killed, raped, murders, hundreds of thousands actually in the last 10 years. We have between 25 and 30,000 white women, according to the National Crime Survey of the Justice Department, which has been run by a black radical for the last 8 years, right? Currently run by a black radical. And those figures themselves show that between 25 and 35,000 white women have been raped every year. So in 10 years, just in the rape figures, 300 1,000 or so white women have been raped by black males. And you look at those figures and they show, because they show both victim and predator. On the opposite side, the white rape against black females is so low that it's statistically zero. It doesn't even show up with a single 1 percentage point. Now, this is from the National Crime Survey done. It's the most complete and the most inclusive survey of crime, both predator, offense, victim, and the race of all. They do this, they do it by race, not because they're trying to discriminate against blacks. And they don't ever talk about these figures. It's done to try to show, to make sure there's no racism going on against blacks. What it shows is massive, vicious racial crimes, cross-racial crimes, blacks against whites. So if you're going to make some sort of ledger about how white people are so terrible because they're doing this or that to black people physically, the ledger is entirely on one side and not the other. So over 300,000 white women in the last 10 years raped by black males, literally statistically zero blacks. I mean, just basically you're talking in their own figures of a few hundred blacks compared to 300,000 white women suffering. That's a good subject for you, Lana.
Any comments, sir?
Yeah, I'll definitely get into that.
Now,
I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? I mean,
yeah,
and to portray white people as these vicious racial haters and hurting, that white people are hurting blacks. And again, we've got to go back to the fact that it's not black people that really popularize Black Lives Matter. It's the media that says this every day in the New York Times and the Washington Post and ABC and NBC and CBS, even Fox News has all kinds of things about, you know, that blacks really, you know, stopped by police. And the Republican candidates, Mario, you know, Marco and all the rest of them, even people like Romney, what an incredible cuck he is. All these people coming out and saying, yeah, blacks are really discriminated against. At least Ann Coulter stood up against that the other day.
Yeah. Well, we need to talk more about that in the second segment. We're going to take a break here shortly. But one thing I want to mention as well is that the media, they do not recognize that the rhetoric that they are perpetuating or that they are, you know, the line that they hold is perpetuating the violence against whites. I mean, they talk about taking responsibility, especially in relation to what Trump said, you know, during, you know, a few of his meetings or whatever, because one guy, this John McGraw, sucker punched another. I don't know if that was a Chicago rally or whatever. But
how many millions of people have been to Trump rallies?
Well, exactly. Yeah, this is it. And somehow that he's responsible for all them or whatever. But
helps the enemy. But let's point out something. If you look at the video, you don't hear the sound very clear, but it's clear this black guy is going there. He's shooting the finger at these guys and their wives. He's screaming epithets, probably the F word and everything else about this. And this one guy just, you know, reacts. Those are used to be called fighting words. And it used to be say that you can assault people even by language, you know, in the old days, if you do that, where you have kind of a right, they understood some sort of self-defense that way. I'm not defending that, but what I'm saying is it's such hypocrisy. And finally, what they're doing with this is the media, by broadcasting the world 24/10, 24/7 every day, that Trump is promoting violence. What they're doing is they're egging on violence against innocent Trump people, and what's happened in Chicago. They're promoting violence by this lie. The truth is Trump has never promoted violence. He's only said, he talked about self-defense. If people are attacking you, you have a right to defend yourself. You know,
yeah.
Simple as
yeah.
that.
He's standing up to them for once. He's actually taking that stand. Now, David, tell us about your website. Tell us where people can see your videos. Give us some of the titles of your book. You have a lot of material out there. You're recently on Twitter as well, so we definitely want to know where people can follow you there.
Yeah, well, my Twitter account is David Duke at Dr. David Duke, Dr. David Duke. And it's really, you know, gone crazy. So everybody goes there and joins in. I have a Facebook account. We run anywhere between 200,000 and 850,000 Facebook posts constantly, you know, and reach, Facebook post reach. And so you can reach me there. DavidDuke.com is my website. I have a radio show on Monday through Friday, 5 days a week at 11 o'clock Eastern time every day. Now it's going to be Eastern, you know, daylight savings time. And I have great guests there. We have great discussions like we're having today, different topics almost every day. And of course, I've got some major books. My Awakening is like the most reprinted, the most read book, I guess, for European Americans who are conscious of what's going on in the world. I have Jewish Supremacism, which is in 24 languages now all over the world, probably the best-selling book in the world on the Jewish racist tribalism, the supremacism, that is the reason why we're facing this disaster. And I have the most recent book I put out is, of course, The Secret Behind Communism, which is the most definitive book yet showing and proving that communism was basically a Jewish way toward power. It was a Jewish tribalist, racist con job and takeover of Russia by people with Jewish interests against what they consider to be an anti-Semitic regime. It even has personal interviews and quotes that I did with Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the great Nobel Prize winner. So those are some of my books. My videos, the biggest, most popular single video is CNN, Goldman Sachs, and the Zio Matrix. Recent videos are David Duke Responds to CNN and speaks directly to Trump and the American people. That's one. I have another one. We've just put out a video of my my campaign speech, or one of them, in 1992 in Plymouth, Massachusetts, to a group of people. It was broadcast on CNN. And you'll get a real good idea of what I had to say and how I comport myself in that video. It's an hour speech with questions and answers. And it shows that everything that most of these Republicans and everything Donald Trump's talking about today are things that I talked about 25 years ago. I wish I'd have been listened to. So those are some of the ways you can reach me.
All right. Very good. DavidDuke.com. Check out his books, videos, and of course, follow him on Facebook and Twitter. We'll have all the links up on the program page in the show notes. All right. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be right back with the second hour. Good show. Stay tuned. It's a rough beat, as afraid as the dark is alive.
Well, friends and listeners, we will continue with the second hour at redicemembers.com. Go there to sign up and tune in. We have much more to talk about with Duke and get the real story of what is happening this election, not only with Trump, but also the other Republican and Democratic nominees and how deeply tied in they are with the establishment. We're also going to talk about how things are developing into the future and a number of other issues. So subscribe and support independent media. redicemembers.com is the website where you can hear the second hour of this show and any of our previous ones. We have over 1,000 shows going back to 2006. But we'll take a short break here. If you want to see our upcoming guests, please take a look in the radio archive. We have much more coming in just a few days, but we'll be back right now with the second hour.